From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. In May, Forbes magazine featured a story headlined Men Choosing Fatherhood Over Careers. The same month, the Wall Street Journal asked, are dads the new moms? Stay-at-home dads are just a tiny fraction of at-home parents, just 3.4%. But that's double the number of a decade ago, and that's prompting more research and more questions about the trend. Are stay-at-home dads just victims of a dull economy, or are they actively choosing to take on the caregiver role? Do men deal with the same kinds of social isolation and stigma that stay-at-home moms do? Today on the program, we're talking about stay-at-home dads and the fulfillment that some men are finding as full-time parents. Plus, a million-dollar contest to find the next big entrepreneur. Coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Recent U.S. Census data show that about 150,000 men have traded in their breadwinning role to become the primary caregiver of their children. That's more than double the number of a decade ago, and it's not just a byproduct of the recession. According to a recent study by Boston College, more men today are choosing to stay at home with their children. And today on the program, we're talking about the rise of stay-at-home dads and how shared parenting is changing gender roles and family dynamics. Joining me in studio is Dr. Claudia Geist. She's an assistant professor of sociology and gender studies at the University of Utah. And Dr. Geist, thanks so much for your time.
Happy to be here.
Also with us, Robert Wiltsey. He's a former stay-at-home dad. After 11 years raising his three daughters, he returned to the workforce. He currently works in the medical field, and he joins me in studio. Robert, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And he's married to Rhonda Devereaux, a life coach, a speaker, a blogger, and founder of Choice Life Strategies. Again, both Robert and Rhonda raised three children. They're raising three daughters in Layton. And Rhonda's here as well. Rhonda, thanks for your time as well.
Glad to be here.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, 801-355-TALK is our number. Tell us if you're a stay-at-home dad or your husband is a stay-at-home dad, tell us why your family chose this route. What are some of the joys and the frustrations that you're finding with the experience? Again, our number, 801-355-TALK is that number. Rhonda and Robert, I want to start with you. Rhonda, you wrote in a blog entry on Today's Mama that, quote, before we had our children, my husband and I decided that he would stay at home with the kids, unquote. Maybe describe those conversations for us. How did you come to this conclusion of the way you wanted your family to run? Rhonda first.
I'm an engineer by trade and had already been in my career 7 or 8 years at that point. So I was a little more established and was making more money. And so it just seemed like a no-brainer to make that decision for, we wanted one of the parents to be at home. And so based on our situation, it made more sense for that to be him rather than me.
Mm-hmm. Robert, how did you feel about the idea? I mean, was it a purely economic choice for you as well?
Yes. At the time, she was making probably a considerable amount more of money than I was. So it wasn't an easy decision at first because we kind of went over and over it a couple times. But then when we did the numbers, it came out that this was the thing we needed to do.
The movie Mr. Mom came out in 1983, so it wasn't a completely foreign concept. But still, I mean, your decision came years ago. I mean, it was, what, 15 years ago, long before the stay-at-home dad was really visible in society. Robert, how did your family react to the decision? What about friends and coworkers?
Well, to start off with, I have a father that is ex-military, so that was an issue right at first. And plus, I am a weightlifter. You know, we coming from an environment of alpha males walking around a gym, these guys running around trying to impress each other to tell somebody something of this nature. It was, I don't know, a little difficult, but
did you talk about it?
Yeah, they, you know, the typical comments would come up. Oh, you're going to be the mom, and you know, are you going to turn in your manhood? But you know, I just, you know, just moved on from there.
Mm. Rhonda, what about you? I mean, did your family think, oh, she's got the you know, the strength in that family? Or, I mean, did you hear comments from other people that were a little negative?
Not really my family, but the first reaction people would give me when they found out he stayed at home was, oh, so he's the mom. And I'm thinking, I have three C-sections to prove it. No, I'm the mom. And so it was really, and then he received it in a different way, but they'd kind of look at me, well, why is he doing it and you aren't? But in reverse, they would, you know, I had a lot of moms even actually ask, well, is there something wrong with him? Why isn't he working? So it was really interesting to hear, you know, people's inferences or their reasoning behind why they thought we were doing what we were doing instead of that it was the best thing for our children.
Hmm. Speaking with Rhonda Devereaux and Robert Wiltsy about their experience when Robert was the stay-at-home dad, we're talking about the stay-at-home dad trend. There is an uptick in stay-at-home dads across the country, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Also with us is Professor Claudia Geist, an assistant professor of sociology and gender studies at the University of Utah. Dr. Geist, we've heard one Utah couple's experience, their decision-making process. How does their story sort of reflect this larger trend?
Well, I think you mentioned that it's an uptick, and I think that's a very good description because it is a very small proportion of the population who is choosing this path. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do because it really helps, you know, sort of propagate the notion that men can be excellent caregivers as can be women, that it's, you know, women give birth, but the raising of the children, that's not just a women's issue. There is, you know, quite a bit of evidence that stay-at-home dads is, you know, a proportion of the population that's increasing, but it's also important to remember that it's still a really, really small proportion. So depending on how you count stay-at-home dads, if you, you know, some people only look at those who are out of the labor force for at least a year and have no work at all. You know, some argue that you should include freelancers and dads who work part-time in that number. So, you know, you have, you know, 600,000, 2 million, you know, like depending on how narrow you draw things, it's a very small number or a rather small number.
But it's still just 3% of all families who have one parent in the home full-time. I mean, it's just
absolutely
a tiny
it
bit.
Is really a very, it's still, you know, rare, it's still very rare, and the fact that it's very difficult to interpret trends if, you know, among something that is so rare. So I would, you know, say that, you know, stay-at-home dads are not quite the new normal just yet. I know some of the press coverage has gotten really excited about the increase in numbers, but we're still like a far cry from this being something that is just, you know, does not raise an eyebrow.
Mm-hmm. So it's not an overwhelming shift in the way the families work or in the family structure per se. But why is it significant? I mean, there are some significant numbers showing that there is a huge increase in the number of men choosing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there may be many more men than actually are doing it who are interested in it. But I think there are multiple barriers that prevent more dads from staying at home. For one, it is really these widely held, you know, beliefs about gender that it's like not as much of a manly thing to do to stay home and take care of your children full time. You know, like playing with the kids on the weekend and at night is one thing, but really like being the like main responsible person during the day, that's a whole other thing that oftentimes does not mesh very well with our ideas of, you know, like what a real man is. The other side is also that the finances do play an important role. You know, oftentimes it makes sense that, you know, the partner, like if you want one parent to stay at home, you know, that probably is the partner who makes less money. And in the overwhelming majority of household, you know, that is the households that is the female partners. I know that there's some numbers are floating around how like women's contribution to household income has increased, and in fact it did. But if you look at, you know, couples households, like in half of the house, like in 54% of the households, husbands make significantly more money. In a quarter, husbands and wives' earnings are within, you know, $5,000, but only in about 21% does the wife make more than $5,000 more. And so it really is this issue that oftentimes men's careers are more profitable. And so, like, even if they would want to, it's often hard to, you know, exist as a family, especially if you have more than one child, to exist on a woman's salary or income.
Well, the sad reality is there is a wage gap. It seems that you chose a field, Rhonda, that was profitable, and so it worked for your family. Do you think, maybe Robert, do you think more men would make the choice if they could, if they felt like financially this worked best for their family?
I don't know. There's still that stigma of being a stay-at-home dad. I think some men would love to do it, but sometimes their own, the way they look and the way they would come off as more important to them than to change that. They would rather be still number one and on top and in control.
Hmm. Rhonda, in your blog, you wrote that my spouse is a manly man. He pumps iron 5 days a week without fail. Looking at you, Robert, that seems to be the case. I mean, did you have to struggle with that identity of as a nurturer, a caregiver, versus this, you know, sense of masculinity?
Not necessary to a point. You know, to the type of guy I was before, I think there was a progression from when I did start to stay home to from where I was. And that progression was, at first, I was the typical, you know, loudmouth running around, kind of that guy that had to be, you know, the guy on top. But I think the changeover is that once you get around children, there is a different demeanor. And I think it was an on-the-job training. When I first came in, I was able to adjust to it, but there was a learning curve as I was working with the children. I don't know. To go back to what you're saying, what men do if they could, I think that there's such a stigma to it that I don't think they could. That most men will do it because of that.
Hmm. Do you think the stigma is lessening as more, as at least, even though it's a tiny little fraction, stay-at-home dads are more visible, Claudia Geist?
I think probably over time it is lessening, but, you know, as is often the case, social change is moving slowly. And even when we look to other countries, say the Scandinavian countries that have very generous parental leave benefits, they have reserved a time for parental leave that can only be taken by the dads, you know, to make sure that it's not only the mothers who take time, like pay time off work. But even there, you know, they're like, you need some teasing. And these are countries where, when you compare like attitudes about gender and like workplace friendliness, you know, they're decades ahead of where the United States are now. And so, you know, things are moving, but they're moving slowly. And it may not just be like men's attitudes, but also women's attitudes. You know, the idea of, you know, mothers, like how they feel about, you know, sort of not being the one in charge of the day-to-day caring, because there is a lot of pressure on mothers to, you know, be just that. It's an important part of the identity. And if you have if you're able to have a stay-at-home parent, for many mothers it's very important that it be them.
Rhonda, did you feel like your sense of what a mother was in any way changed by having Robert stay at home?
No, just there was like interesting dynamics with other people. But I think the genders in general at our house are very blended. I mean, we're pretty balanced. Both of us are. So I don't think, you know, he doesn't stand there and beat his chest, and I don't stand there and wail and scream either. So, but yeah, it was definitely different going back to work and then everyone finding out that he was staying at home. I also was a breastfeeding mom, so the pump was my friend. Mm. And so there was that dynamic that went along to it. So, and then getting home, then the baby wanted me because they knew I was home. So it was tiring the first few years when they were really young, but it's been interesting to watch what that has created in our daughters. And what I mean, because they were, I tell the story in my blog that our youngest, when she was five, says, "I'm so glad I'm a girl." And I says, "Why is that?" And she goes, "Because then I won't have to stay home with the kids like daddy does." So to her, and then so after I quit laughing, I was telling her, well, some dads do, some dads don't, some moms do. But it was just funny because she just didn't know the difference. So it's been interesting to watch the dynamics that's created in them.
Mm. Speaking with Rhonda Devereaux, she is a life coach, a speaker, a blogger, founder of Choice Life Strategies. She and her husband, Robert Wiltsey, had Robert staying home for the first 11 years of their three children's lives. Also with us is Claudia Geist, an assistant professor of sociology and gender studies at the University of Utah. And we're talking about stay-at-home dads and how this rising trend is or is not reshaping gender roles in the family. If you'd like to join us with your thoughts, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We need to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Today on the program, we're talking about the rise in stay-at-home dads. There's still a small fraction of parenting choices, but looking at the reasons why more men are choosing to take a break from their careers to spend time taking care of the kids, what effect is this choice having on couples, on families, and the workplace? Claudia Geist is with us. She's an assistant professor of sociology and gender studies at the University of Utah. We're also speaking with a Layton couple, Robert Wiltsey and Rhonda Devereaux. Robert stayed home with their three children for 11 years before returning to the workforce. Rhonda is a life coach, a speaker, and a blogger, and they're all in studio, and we invite you to join our conversation as well. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. During the break, we were talking a little bit about your decision, Robert, to go back to work and how that transition was a little strange. Can you describe what, how did you explain in a job interview that you stayed at home and now you're ready to go back to work?
I just came right out with it. To look at a guy across, especially if it was, for some reason, if it was a female that was interviewing me in HR, it was a little different. She would actually ask me questions and was quite interested. But if I went in and it was a male, he would look at me as if I just stole $1 million from him. He just would look at me like I was weak. And basically, those were the ones I never heard from again. But it was different. I was used to a schedule around children, nap times, stuff of that nature, shopping. Everything had its place and time. And then to go back into the workforce where it was straight time, it was, you know, dealing with somebody else's schedules and times instead of the one I had set up for me and my family. It was a little different, but it took about 6 months for probably me to adjust after I came out, but I still found myself coming home trying to go right back to my same daily grind when I'd see the children.
Many stay-at-home moms describe this sense of social isolation, that, you know, they don't have this social network, friends to go to lunch with, that they had when they were on the job. I imagine that's only amplified for the stay-at-home dad, because you can't find many men who are in the same boat. I mean, did you feel that? Did you feel like you had a peer group?
When I was a stay-at-home dad?
Is that, yeah.
Yes. Not really. I was at every function at school. I was kind of isolated a little bit. There were mostly mothers, stay-at-home mothers, and they would talk to you, but I was almost like the guy or person you didn't want to get caught talking to at field trips or something. So I spent a lot of time by myself. There was a few mothers over time that I built up a camaraderie with because they were similar to me. They were in the workforce and quit their jobs to stay home with their children. So they kind of understood a little bit. It was more the people that had never really been employed that were staying home that looked at me a little differently. But there wasn't very many people I can, reflect my the things that I was going through and stuff. So and
comparing, you know, diaper brands and stuff like
yeah.
that.
I mean, well, yeah, and a lot of that. Thank God for What to Expect When You're Expecting. That book, I must have thumbed through that thing a million times, finding different things, ads. I even caught myself looking at through a motherly magazine once. So, but you know, it is, some of it was innate. I would just, when you go with kids and stuff, you have a built-in mechanism that shows you what to do. But with people I hung out with, there wasn't too many, and a lot of my friends were still there for me. But as a getting in a peer group where there was other people in the same predicament as me, I didn't have a lot.
Rhonda, I mean, did you worry about Robert during those days, those early days when he was kind of alone doing his thing, didn't really have the social network that a lot of stay-at-home moms find?
I saw how hard the adjustment was for him. And it's interesting because I've worked with mostly men my whole life, and they would get the phone calls from their wives. And for a while, I would get the phone calls from him, and I'm like, I can't talk right now. I'm busy. And so it was interesting to watch him adjust to just the whole situation in general. Like I say, I think that's where the gender roles blend. When someone's in that situation, that isolation kicks in, or something happens and you're not sure what to do and you just need a sounding board. And because he didn't have a bigger peer group around him, he'd call me. And sometimes I'd be, I can't talk. And that was before cell phones were as prevalent and everything. Sure. So it was difficult sometimes to give him that time that he needed too, especially during the day when I was at work.
Claudia Geist, what does the research show on the social isolation part of a stay-at-home dad experience? I mean, is that more intense for them than it is for a stay-at-home mom because they can find a playgroup or whatever? I mean, what does the research show?
Well, I think, I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but I mean, if you think about it, like stay-at-home dads do face sort of this double jeopardy. I mean, for one, you know, these widely held beliefs about that it's unusual for a dad to stay at home are shared by everyone, not just, you know, not just other men, but also by other stay-at-home mothers. So, you know, they're sort of different. And then, you know, just in terms of numbers, you have fewer of them. So probably outside of the biggest of cities where you have, you know, like daddy and me music time, you know, some of these kinds of events, you really don't have a space where stay-at-home dads can talk to other dads. I think social media and, you know, other online connections may be one way that, you know, dads who stay-at-home dads who live in areas where they don't have many peers to choose from can connect with others in the same situation, but it's not quite the same as going down to the playground and everyone around you being in exactly the same position. I mean, in that sense, they really do face the social isolation more so than stay-at-home moms, since they're isolated from the other stay-at-home parents and not just, you know, their peers in the workplace.
Speaking with Claudia Geist, an assistant professor of sociology and gender studies at the University of Utah. Also with us, Robert Wiltsy and Rhonda Devereaux, a couple where Robert decided to stay home with his three daughters for 11 years before re-entering the workforce. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Let's go to the phones, and Adam is with us from Salt Lake City. Adam, hi.
Hi there.
Hi, go right ahead.
Well, I'm my wife and I both work, and we've got a little two-year-old. My schedule is very different, so I have a lot more flex time to stay at home and do a little more home parenting in the week. And I grew up with a single, you might hear my two-year-old in the back.
I love it.
All right, buddy, you're on the air. So I grew up in a single male household, so my dad raised my brother and I. And although I'm not a single stay-at-home, my son's in the back saying he's on air.
Hi there.
So, I'm a little bit curious. Do you have any second generation stuff where you have like maybe a male who is raising children or co-parenting or single parenting? Do they raise children different after growing up in an all male household where the only nurture they really got was from a male? Does that seem to make a difference? Because I know with my wife and I, we, you know, like I can't fathom the idea of the male not being there as a nurturing portion, you know.
Interesting question, Adam. Thanks very much for the call. Claudia Geist, what do you think?
Well, I think that one of the issues is that there are just so few out there. I mean, if it were up to me, I would, you know, subject everyone to interviews at all times. But unfortunately, you know, especially, you know, single dads and their children, they're probably too busy to answer the phone when researchers are calling up. I mean, we do know that role modeling is really important. So what you say makes a lot of sense in that if you have experiences of a father as a caretaker, you probably have broader views of what, you know, men can do, what fathers can do, that, you know, some abilities to, you know, take care, be warm and supportive, you know, are not like female qualities, but they're qualities that are shared by all people, and moms and dads alike. And so I don't think there's any research that shows any like negative effects of growing up with a single father. And I think this is also another slightly growing population, but that is still tiny.
Mm-hmm. But men as nurturers, Robert, you mentioned you have a father who is a little resistant to you being the stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, he was, he's ex-military. He was on TDY a lot. My mother pretty much raised us. The nurturer in my family was my mother. My father was the one that he was the enforcer. So, and when I did see him, it was always, you know, something I did wrong or, you know, stuff of that nature. So.
And I mean, Rhonda, was your father the nurturing one in your family? I mean, did you see him as someone you could go to for comfort?
No, my home life when I was younger was not very stable. So I am adopted from birth, and then my mom that adopted me was married multiple times. So I never had a stable father figure at all, really. So
you, both of you, were creating something new.
Absolutely. Yeah. Robert did have four sisters growing up, so I think that helped him deal with all the estrogen excess in our household.
Toilet seat was never up.
Yeah, toilet seat's never up.
Adam, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. So the uncertain future of the career, I mean, those are some of the challenges that the stay-at-home dad has to face, as well as the stay-at-home mom. Looking back, Robert, I mean, do you feel like you would do it again?
Yes.
Why?
You have to look at it as if for the situation I was in and both me and my wife were going through, you know, I have to. But at the same time, I think I got something out of it. So, you know, I've been to college, but this was a PhD for me in life. So to be around the kids and all that stuff, it helped me not only I think get away from some of those stigmas that are on stay-at-home dads, but same time helped me made me a better person over time. So
did you see a change in him, Rhonda, he stayed with the kids?
Absolutely. I mean, and he's much more playful even now with the kids. I'm more the planner, the organizer, taking care of everything, and he's the playful one. So in a lot of ways, they got much more of that when they were small than if I would have been the one staying home. So, but it's interesting to see, even when they were little, like, it's almost like they waited for me to get home so I didn't miss the milestones. They were very fair with us. But when one of them was sick, they wouldn't always go to just him. I mean, they were really balanced about who they'd go to. A lot of times when kids are young, you see them just run to mom. It was never that way. So I think our kids feel more of a balance of who they can approach and on what they can approach them to, you know, approach them with and stuff like that. It's we have a pretty balanced household in that respect.
I think all parents are looking for this greater work-life balance as stay-at-home dads become more visible. Claudia Geist, to me, what effect do you think this will have on workplace and flexibility policies and perceptions?
Mm-hmm. Well, one can only hope that this, you know, keeps moving things in, you know, the right direction towards making it easier for employees to combine work and family. Because one of the things I wanted to mention briefly is that the ability to have one parent stay at home is not an option for many people in the United States. I mean, many people think would love to have one parent stay home. You know, many dads would love to stay home, many moms want to stay home. But for many families, like, two earners are just very necessary. And what I like about the idea, though, of the trend of having more stay-at-home dads is that the idea of children does not automatically, will not automatically be equated into a decrease in women's labor force participation, you know, them taking time off to, like, take the kids to the doctor, but maybe increasingly so men will take care of these issues. Because what
so increasing the balance of labor within the family structure itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so, like, even if, you know, it will never happen that there are as many stay-at-home dads and stay-at-home moms, if there is just an increase in, you know, sort of the responsibilities men take overall, I think everyone will benefit, because not only will employers, you know, treat men and women more equally, because they don't see only women being at risk of, you know, sort of decreasing their efforts and taking more family related leaves, but also, you know, it will also benefit the children, and so in the end, then everybody wins.
Robert, even though you're back in the workforce, I mean, do you find that you're still, you know, willing to take the kids to the doctor, or, you know, able to take the time off, have that flexibility, and share those responsibilities with Rhonda?
Yes. I'm getting less of it now. With my schedule, my wife's had to pick up more of what I used to do. So when I come home, sometimes I catch myself, like, if they're sitting there, to try to pull them away from the TV to go do stuff with me. And for any time my wife asks, hey, can you go pick her, one of the kids up, I'm always adamant to do it so I can get, you know, try to feel I'm still where I was contributing to where, you know, where I was years before.
And, I mean, I guess this all feeds into that, can I call it a myth of having it all at once? I mean, is it possible to do that, Rhonda?
I think it is. You set your intention and you pay attention to balance. And Robert and I communicate very well. We talk about it. I try not to get his job's not as flexible as mine. I've had my job a lot longer and it's a different type of job. So I have more time to do some of those things. But if I try to speak to him before I get resentful that I'm doing too much. So we really try to maintain a good balance. And the kids see that communication, and you can, I mean, in turn, they communicate more with us, I think, too. So
the question that I asked Claudia Geist about cultural acceptance, I mean, do you feel like people are more willing to accept choices like this? Like the stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, I think they are. I think, like I say, at some point, you got to not pay attention to what anybody thinks and do what works for your own family. It's all about your own choices. Being in a male-dominated field my whole life, there was always there. I never had a problem with it, but it was always interesting to see people's reactions. But it was generally well accepted. This one, it seems people have a harder time accepting. But in the end, it was about what was best for our kids, not what anybody else thought. So, but I do think that going forward, people are more accepting of a lot of things in this day and age than they were, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So
you're nodding, Claudia.
Yeah, I mean, like, sometimes I said earlier that social change sometimes happens more slowly than many of us would like. But I think there is a trend towards, you know, acceptance of more diversity in all aspects of life, like regarding how, I mean, if you think about this question that is on, you know, standard surveys about, like, how people feel about, like, mothers of young children working, there's a much greater acceptance of that, simply because it's the reality of life that for many mothers, like, they just don't really have an option. And people do believe that working mothers can have as warm a relationship as mothers who stay at home. And so I really think there's this general trend towards more openness towards all sorts of living arrangements, just, you know, what's best for the families. And the limiting factors, like, maybe, you know, sort of policy barriers, money issues, not necessarily what people feel and think, but it's all, you know, it may just take a while for like big social changes to happen.
Mm. Well, I'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. Claudia Geist, an assistant professor of sociology and gender studies at the University of Utah. Claudia, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Robert Wiltsey, former stay-at-home dad. Robert, thanks to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Rhonda Devereaux, a life coach and a speaker and a blogger. Rhonda, thanks to you for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the search for the next big entrepreneur. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Well, the search is on for the next Philo T. Farnsworth. Philo Farnsworth, of course. He's the Utah entrepreneur who built and patented the first television back in 1928. A company called Grow America is convinced there are more Philos out there, and they're sponsoring a competition with a large cash prize to support budding business. Today on the program, we're talking about entrepreneurship in Utah and just what it takes to launch the next big thing in business. Joining me is Alan E. Hall. He's an entrepreneur, an angel investor, a venture capitalist, an author, and philanthropist. He's the chairman of the Utah Technology Council and founder of several companies, including Grow America, an organization which helps build a business. And Alan E. Hall joins me by phone from his home office in Ogden, Utah. Alan, good morning. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Jennifer. A pleasure to be with you this morning.
Now, the contest is the Grow America Springboard Fall Competition. Entries are open right now, and they'll continue through next Thursday, August 30th at 6 o'clock. And there's more information on our website, kcpw.org. But if you've got questions or comments about budding businesses in the state of Utah, give us a call, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Alan Hall, so what's the goal of this competition, the Grow America Springboard?
Really, our objective is to create jobs in the state of Utah and across the United States. There are just so many people who are underemployed or unemployed. And we recognize that one of the great engines of economic development that creates jobs is entrepreneurship. As a matter of fact, over the last 30 years, there have been 40 million jobs created by risk-taking entrepreneurs. So we recognize the model. So our money then goes to help entrepreneurs start or grow their businesses with the hope that their efforts then will create jobs, and then there will be opportunity for people to be employed. That's really the purpose at the end of the day of this objective.
Mm. I want to get to the specifics of your contest in just a bit, but let's talk about the current business climate. I mean, we've been in this recessionary slump for a few years now, unfortunately. Is the slow economy discouraging entrepreneurs from taking the leap, from taking a risk?
Well, it's actually maybe the best time to launch a business and find a niche, if you will, where there are customers. So in the broad scheme of things, obviously the economy is having great difficulty. But there are companies that I work with every day that have double-digit growth, that are profitable, that are hiring people. So there are people in our community that do have a great idea. They have talked with potential customers. Those are the people we want to encourage to start this, to take a leap of faith, and get going. So although the economy in general might be stagnant, not so for entrepreneurs with a great idea.
So there's no bad time to launch a business, huh?
There never has been a bad time. Matter of fact, in some of the most difficult times, if you think back over the course of history, it has been the best time to launch a business.
What about getting credit? Most businesses, you know, they need a loan or some sort of financial boost to make that investment in equipment or to build prototypes or, you know, launch a marketing campaign, whatever. I mean, do you find that banks right now are starting to loosen the wallet or pumping money into the economy again?
Well, it would be the hope that banks would, but they're under such heavy regulation that unless a company can demonstrate its ability to receive a loan and pay back that money, they're not going to get a loan. And so a lot of entrepreneurs are just not in that position. They don't have enough history financially to show the predictability that they'll pay it back. So as much as a bank would like to make a loan, it's just not going to happen. So angel investors, family and friends, and others who can step in to help a company get to a certain stage and then qualify for a loan is what has to happen. And in America right now, we do have a challenge in growing companies around inventory or receivables because of the very problem that they a company is challenged to pay back that loan on a timely basis.
Mm. Speaking with Alan E. Hall, an entrepreneur, angel investor, author, and philanthropist, and the founder of Grow America. It's a group that is sponsoring a competition to encourage businesses to grow. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Tell us a bit more about the competition. You're billing this as Shark Tank meets American Idol. So a very colorful way to talk about, to describe your competition. What does the competition phase look like?
Well, what we're trying to do is encourage people to step up and be entrepreneurs. Now, some have already started a business. We're happy to help them. There are other companies that are growing. So we will reward money in three categories: those with just the idea, those that are underway, and those that actually have a profitable business. We want to help all three of those. The money that we give to the company is basically free. There is no obligation, no strings attached. It means you're going to get $10,000, $100,000. We want you to take that money and use it for growth. But this is not a loan. It's not an equity position. We're just, if you will, people who believe that we're in an altruistic way, that if we give people the right companies that show us that they have that potential, we hope that our money, which then they can use to grow it, will indeed, at the end of the day, create the jobs that we hope will come to those who are underemployed. So that's really the mission of this. And the competition invites everybody in the state of Utah that has something in those three categories to step forward and be part of a competition where they'll be judged. They'll be going against their peers with other ideas, and the winners will come out of it with some cash and some services.
So like American Idol, you will have business people standing on a stage before a panel of judges and an audience giving their best pitch. What makes a good pitch in your mind, Alan Hall?
Well, I see hundreds of these kinds of opportunities myself every year, and what makes a great pitch is the confidence level that the entrepreneur has about their ability to drive this business forward to be profitable. And the one thing I look at time after time is, does the entrepreneur, does he or she really understand their marketplace, their customers? Do they know their needs? Do they know what they're already using to solve some of their problems? And if that particular entrepreneur really has that well understood and has then a solution around that, that's very attractive to investors. The other thing is we hope that the market is large so that they may not capture 100% of it, but a small percent and still have a viable business. So think about that. Entrepreneur with enthusiasm, a great market opportunity, and they've got a fabulous solution that people will want to buy.
But it's one thing to have this killer idea, and it's another thing to have a framework, some outline of how it would actually work in the marketplace. I mean, how much homework is going into these pitches, these ideas?
Well, you know, traditionally what happens, and this is the worst way it occurs, but we find entrepreneurs who go out and build the idea first and rarely even talk to the customer. Then they get some money and they start to build it. Now, at that point in time, they go out and start to look for a customer and they find, uh-oh, wait a minute, I missed the mark. They need more money and they keep looking and looking for the customer base and never find it, and then they're bankrupt. What we recommend, and the thing that makes most sense, is that you come up with your idea, and you now go out and engage with potential customers, and you talk with them and say, help us to understand your needs. And then you go back to your lab, back to your garage, and you work on that idea, bring it forward again to that potential customer and say, what do you think now? And it's a process of going back and forth, back and forth. So those that really make this happen have spent just as much time on the marketing side, understanding their customers, as they have on developing the product.
And are you also looking for people with previous business experience, people who know how to manage and deal with the financial end of running a business?
Well, those obviously are the people that have the highest degree of success because they've had you know, good and bad experiences. And those that have learned the hard way are really interesting to us because they now have identified what works and what doesn't. We also offer through Grow America classes and educational things to help entrepreneurs learn some of these things if they haven't already experienced them firsthand. So no matter if a person wins an award of cash, we also educate everybody that comes into this competition on what they must do in the future to be successful.
Mm. You mentioned learning the hard way. I mean, what useful role do you think failure can play in running a business and launching a new venture?
Well, I've had a number of successes, but I've had more failures myself in startup businesses. And what you learn from that is, I don't know if, you know, when you think about the money you lose on that, we could go to Harvard several times. But that learning experience is the one to step back and say, what did I learn from that mistake? What would I do differently this next time? Entrepreneurs need to be thought of as having a lifetime journey of entrepreneurship, not just a one-time opportunity. This is something they live and breathe and they will for the rest of their lives. So failure is absolutely wonderful if people take the opportunity to sit back and understand what happened. And the best entrepreneurs that I know have had lots of failure and have learned from them.
We're speaking with Alan E. Hall, an entrepreneur, venture capitalist, and founder of Grow America. It's a company that is building businesses and appealing to you for entries for the Grow America Springboard Fall Competition. It's open now and will continue until next Thursday, August 30th at 6 o'clock. You can enter on their website and find out more information, growam.com, and there's a link at kcpw.org. Alan E. Hall, you've sponsored these kinds of competitions before. Tell us about some of your winners. I mean, what was it that really set those winners' ideas apart from others?
Well, we've had a number of winners that have gone on then to obtain additional funding from angel investors, and some have even received money from venture capitalists. Many have now received a bank loan, and those companies have demonstrated that they really do have a very viable business. So our history is that over the last 6 years, we've hosted these competitions under the name Grow Utah, and have done these competitions in literally all the major cities here in the state, and have found this to be the most successful way for us to create the jobs that we talked about earlier. So the competitions are meant to make people aware that there's money out there that they can obtain with no obligation. And these companies that then do demonstrate it have shown remarkable results financially and in the hiring of people.
Can you give us just a single example of one of the winners?
Yeah, there's a company that has a device that you put in your mouth for those that have speech impediments. And they just won in our spring competition $100,000, and they now have been in the process of hiring more and more people. Their market is very large because there are a number of people who actually, because of their impediment, don't know how to form a particular sound. This device that fits in your mouth then gives you feedback on a screen to show you when you move your tongue this or that way exactly what sound is going to come out. So they have this immediate feedback. Well, this was our number one winner in the competition, and because of that money, they are now moving this particular company forward very, very rapidly. We have a company that makes some toys and some desks and other kinds of things in a modular way, and we find that they're now getting large retailers who want to carry their particular product. So these companies that have something that's very compelling and there's an audience out there for them, we find that they quickly start to rise to the top, particularly once people find out they've won the competition.
We've only got about 30 seconds left, but give us the particulars. So people can enter online.
Yes, they can. They can go to growam.com, growam.com. They will see the various categories on there. We invite them to put forward a small little bit of a business plan, what their idea is. Judges then, beginning in September, will start to look at and evaluate their particular presentation. And if they can get past the first row of judges, if you will, there will be an opportunity for them at some point in time then to actually present to judges in a live setting and explain their particular business. So we want people to register this week and then prepare themselves for the judging upcoming.
And if you don't have an idea yourself, you can go and watch, right?
Yes, we invite anybody to come to these things. You know, we'll be doing these competitions on an ongoing basis. We'll do it again next year. So again, this is an ongoing program where we're encouraging people to step forward and start a business.
Alan Hall, the founder of Grow America. Alan, thanks very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jennifer.
City Views is a production of KCPW in Salt Lake City. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with the scholar Laurel Thatcher Ulrich. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.